The second vignette is the issue of principles of triage. And again, nothing that we're doing here is psak, please consult, opposed to consult your shul rabbi about practical issues. There was an article in the New England Journal of Medicine, which I excerpted a piece from in number 18. It's available online. Which put forth a set of four values to use in deciding triage for resources. All of these four are consistent with values that are important in Judaism. One, maximizing the benefits provided by scarce resources. You want to use your resources in a way that will maximize the benefits. Number two, treating people equally, meaning you don't prioritize based on wealth, based on status, right? Like the Torah says, Mishpat echad yelachem, you have one justice for all, you try to treat people equally. Number three, you promote and reward instrumental value to the community. Those who are familiar with the Gemara in Gittin about Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha and Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya will recall that is in the Gemara there and in Tosfos in Gittin. And prioritizing those who are worst off, as in those who would die soonest without care. So if two patients come to me and one of them needs it more in a more dire way, that's the one I'd prioritize. Similarly, Newsweek printed, I brought in number 19, what are now called the Pittsburgh Protocols, which, again, the values are very similar to what you saw in the New England Journal of Medicine article. Now, these values can lead and do lead to conflicting results, right? What do you do if two patients come in simultaneously, one of them is a healthcare worker, high instrumental value to the community, who would not die imminently, but could be endangered by waiting. The other one is a non-healthcare worker, whose need is immediate and dire. So do I take the one whose need is immediate and dire, or do I take the one who has the higher instrumental value to the community? So the paper, the New England Journal of Medicine paper, sets out recommendations for how to operate within these values. However, within Judaism, it's important to recognize that there is a fifth value, and the fifth value that we're talking about here actually will override the others in many circumstances. And this is the value that we talked about in the beginning. V'lo sa'amod al dam reyecha. Don't stand by while your brother's blood is shed. And that is a religious value obligating us to act on behalf of the patient who is in front of us. That patient has a natural, automatic, and unconscious claim on the person and the resources of the healthcare professional. It's a powerful value outside of the pandemic situation. It imposes a duty of care in general. I see somebody in trouble. I have to do something on their behalf. And it's powerful here because it means I don't have the right to turn away from the patient in front of me. So taking that fifth value in tandem with the other four, Judaism approaches situations in the following ways. First situation. Two people come in simultaneously. Now, I have to pause there. The word simultaneous is a loaded word. Right now, I'm going to employ a thin definition of simultaneous. Simultaneous means the doors to the ER are open and two people are brought in at the same time. However, we're going to come back to see from Rav Herschel Schachter a novel view of simultaneous in a time of pandemic, which is going to employ a more thick definition, so to speak, of simultaneous. So we're going to come back to the question of what constitutes simultaneous. It's a very important and real question. But right now, what we're saying is this. Two people are brought in simultaneously to the ER. How do I prioritize? So the system within Jewish ethics, as I understand it, is that we would have three methods of prioritization. Number one, we would look at immediate need, because the Torah says, don't stand by, so you can't stand by. If one of them needs the ventilator now and is not going to survive without it, the other one is able to hold off, then the one who needs it now has priority. Rav Wozner, a major authority in Israel, wrote this in source number 20, and he said, this is obvious. The one who is in front of you who needs it right now precedes the one who is in front of you who doesn't need it right now. That's number one. Number two, effectiveness of treatment. Now, when I say number two, I have to be very clear. I'm not prioritizing by saying one, two, and three for the following values. I'm just presenting three values, and I can't say them all at the same time. Zachar v'shamar v'dibur echad ne'amru. So the I'm not prioritizing among the priorities. The number one, immediate need. Number two, effectiveness of treatment. So that if one of the two patients is likely to survive if given this treatment, the other patient is not likely to survive even with the treatment. So we prioritize the one who is more likely to survive. The Mishnah Berurah brought this in dealing with cases in which somebody is in a fire, in which somebody goes into a fire and finds two people in source number 21. And one of them is healthier and one of them is dying. So he has to save the healthier person who he still has the chance to save. And Rav Moshe Feinstein brought this in source number 22, updated to deal with a hospital ER. And he says, you take the one who you believe that you can actually help. So that's your second priority. And then your third one is what we call the instrumental value, value to the community. And there are many sources in Judaism to support this perspective, including, you have a classic Mishnah in Maseches Horios, which presents a hierarchy for saving people. And some of that hierarchy is understood to be based on the person's value to the community. Rav Herschel Schachter pointed this out in source number 23, but he did something that honestly is a little bit difficult to understand. He writes in source number 23, in a responsive that he issued before Pesach regarding triage, he quotes you the Mishnah in Horios, and he says it appears that the way this Mishnah was written, at least in part, was to say that you save those who are of higher need, of greater need, to the community. He then quotes Rav Moshe Feinstein, who says it's really hard to actually apply this Mishnah, and he himself says it's hard to establish who exactly is needed for the community more than somebody else's, and therefore we don't follow that Mishnah. So if you ask me, at that stage in his responsum, he's telling you, don't go based on value to the community. However, later on in the same responsum, he talks about putting an elderly patient on a ventilator and then having a DNR so that you'll be able to use the ventilator for somebody else who has more life, we assume, left and is able to help the community. And there he comes back to this idea that they may be able to provide more to the community and that that will be a factor in the decision. So I'm not really sure where Rav Schachter ends up. He quotes the idea, then he seems to dismiss it, and then he comes back and resuscitates it, so to speak. No pun intended. But it's not entirely clear where he ends up. Rav Asher Weiss, on the other hand, in source number 24, in his video, says there's no possibility of prioritizing based on value to the community. He says, you have no idea what somebody is going to do for the community a year from now, or 2 years from now, or whatever it is. You can't make assessments like that. He's not willing to accept that kind of prioritization. But the truth of the matter is that benefiting the community is a time-honored principle. The Chasam Sofer brought it, I gave it to you in source number 25. He had the view that the community is considered a supersized individual of greater worth than the individual. Rabbi Dr. Avram Steinberg in Harafuah Kahalacha in source number 26 brings the same idea. He says the community and the collective are not only a collection of individuals, but an independent entity of its own nature with its own rules and with the community's collective needs, sometimes even at the expense of the individual. He says the community must make a special calculation of its own in different circumstances. The community has to be able to say, this is what we need. Rav Shaul Yisraeli, in source number 27, points out there's precedent for this in the fact that Jewish law provides the leadership of the nation the right to take the nation to war against an enemy for the benefit of the community, even though there's an anticipation that individual soldiers will be harmed. Nonetheless, for the benefit of the community, they're able to make that decision. Further, there are logical reasons for saying that when it comes to healthcare workers in particular, the community should prioritize taking care of healthcare workers specifically. First of all, because it will help their morale and their willingness to take risks, because they know the community has their back and is going to look out for them if they become ill. And that's something I noted from Rav Chaim David HaLevi in source number 28. He's dealing with the nation taking extra steps in order to save soldiers who are being held captive. But as the New England Journal of Medicine article notes, if you don't cure healthcare workers, then all of their future patients will suffer. So it's a practical calculation, not just a morale calculation. So what you see are that when two people come in simultaneously, we have three values: immediate need, effectiveness of treatment, and value to the community, and especially the value of the healthcare worker. And yes, these can all lead to conflicting results. I'm going to pause for a second just because I see a few comments that have come in, some private and some broader. I'll just answer these quickly, emphasis on quickly. I can see that we're approaching 9 o'clock already. If we consider value to the community, how do we account for privilege? Certainly people who are of more value to the community are educated professionals with higher social economic status. You are right. One of the big problems that I have with the New England Journal of Medicine article is the emphasis on the value of equality. The idea that everybody should be equal, where the New England Journal of Medicine article goes so far as to say that you can't employ a first-come, first-served policy because that prioritizes people who got sick earlier and it prioritizes people who live closer to the hospital. I don't think that from a halachic perspective we can go that route. I think equality is important, but I don't think it outstrips some of the other values. That would be my answer, as bad as I feel for the implications of it. I had a private question here. Can you make life and death decisions based on an individual's value to the community at this one moment? Perhaps there will be much greater value to the community in the near future, and that's Ravasher Weiss's point. Very true. Along with your follow-up to the person who sent that private question. And then someone else asked where in the chat to find Rav Weiss's book. So if you go back to, it's back a few steps, go back to 8:41 p.m. in the chat. If you joined after that, then you won't have it, but email me and I'll be glad to send it to you. Okay. So that's all the simultaneous case. What about the following case? A low-priority patient comes in, and I hate to use the term low-priority patient. There's no such thing as a low-priority person. Fine. Nonetheless, it's the expedient term. If you have somebody who is of lower priority who comes in, and there's no one else right now, so the general rule is we treat the patient right away, and we don't say, well, maybe a higher priority patient is going to be brought in next, because we have the principle of lo samod adam rayecha, don't stand by while somebody's blood is being shed. However, here I come to Rav Herschel Schachter's idea, what I call thick simultaneity. The idea that simultaneous doesn't mean on a knife edge. Simultaneous actually means, well, this is his point. He says when we think about people coming in simultaneously, you can't really say it's whoever's in front of me, because what you can also have is the knowledge that other people are about to be brought in. It's not as though you can say that this moment should be viewed in a vacuum. It is currently 9 o'clock. But I know it's a pandemic. And I know, based on experience over the last several days, that patients are brought in at a certain rate, and I can expect that if I wait 10 minutes, there will be another patient. So Rav Schachter suggests that in a pandemic, maybe the definition of simultaneous has to be considered broader. If I can expect that there will be more people who will be brought in shortly, and he does not give a definition of shortly, then the rule indeed will be that, I got distracted by something. If I can anticipate that people will come in shortly, then I will view them all as being simultaneous. The basis for this is the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish, whose words I brought in source number 29, he's dealing with a related issue that's called Lefanenu in Halacha. He's dealing with an issue that is too broad for us to be able to get into right now, so I'm not going to explore it, but I am going to show you what he says that's relevant for us as well. He says, if the situation is common, if it's common for people to come in, then he says, we don't view them as not having arrived yet. We view them as though they were already here. And Rav Schechter borrows that idea in source number 30. As I said in the beginning, I didn't translate his pieces because he chose to publish it only in Hebrew, but I'll explain what he says here. He says, if when they bring in a patient who is elderly and very, very ill first, but they know that in another hour or two, the more young patients who are healthy will be brought in, because that's what happens every day, and it's clear that they don't have enough ventilators to take care of all of the patients, he says they are considered to have arrived simultaneously, and you do not hook up the very elderly patient who may not be able to survive. You have to wait instead for the other patients who you know are going to be brought in, even though you don't really know they're going to be brought in. It is a remarkable chiddush. It is a tremendous novelty that is being employed here. And we'll see three different applications of it. But this is your first application of that idea, so that when we say, who take your first patient first, the answer actually is, not necessarily. It's not so clear that's how we're going to do it, because first doesn't necessarily mean first. That's what Rav Schechter says. The third type of situation, we've dealt with simultaneous. We've dealt with one patient comes in and then another one comes in. Third case, what about where you have a patient who is on a ventilator already, who is of a lower priority, and then you have another patient who comes in who is of a higher priority? What are your options then? So in source number 31, I brought you the Mishnah in Ahalos. It's a classic. Ein dochen nefesh mipnei nefesh. You don't push off one person on behalf of another. And therefore, he says, we generally assume in halacha, you do not remove someone from a ventilator, even if you need that resource for the sake of somebody who is of a higher priority. That's a basic principle in halacha. That is against the direct recommendation of that New England Journal of Medicine article, which actually wants you to poll the patients and get their permission to forfeit their right to the ventilator. But it's a function of lo samor adam reyacha, not standing by while somebody's blood is shed. However, halachic authorities note other ways of dealing with this problem. So that Rav Schechter, in source number 32, is willing to employ, again, this is a second case, the idea of thick simultaneity. The idea that we can view them as having come in at the same time. And what he says is not to remove the lower priority patient. He's not willing to do that. However, he is willing to allow for a DNR for the patient who is already hooked up. To say that, we aren't going to resuscitate them. To say, in order to be able to then use the ventilator for other patients. Rabbi Dr. Steinberg addressed this as well in source number 33. I gave you the reference in his talk for Torah in Motion. And he said we would use other means. Other means being not to renew medicines like dopamine, not starting a new cycle of dialysis, even reducing the parameters of the respirator to a lower setting. I would even go one step further. Halachic authorities have not relied in practice on what I am about to say. However, I first heard about it from Rabbi Jason Wiener from Los Angeles, and then he showed me sources on this, and then Rav Asher Weiss actually mentioned it in the video that I've referenced for you on the source sheet. And that is that in an extreme case, it might be acceptable to remove a patient from a machine which is only prolonging death, in order to give it to somebody else who needs it. In other words, to say that the ventilator is actually an obstruction to death as opposed to a support for life. Those who are healthcare professionals know this is an extremely loaded statement. This has been the subject of tremendous battles in hospitals, including in Toronto. This issue of removing somebody from a ventilator. But Rav Asher Weiss mentioned it as a possibility in source number 33. I gave you the reference to where you can find it in his video. He said that he's not poskening on it, but it's something that could be considered. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach wrote it also very briefly in the journal Asya in the issue Nuntet Samach. His son-in-law, Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, has discussed it at great length. So that's it is a possibility that some are willing to at least discuss. But as a general rule, we would not remove someone. So to review what we've said in terms of triage, and those who just joined in hoping to hear the discussion about alternative treatments, we'll get there eventually, God willing. But what we've now established is, number one, if two people come in simultaneously, noting caveat on the definition of simultaneously, but if two people come in simultaneously, we prioritize using the factors of immediate need, effectiveness of treatment, and value to the community. If a lower priority patient comes in, and we anticipate a higher priority patient coming in, generally speaking, I should be taking care of the lower priority patient first. However, if Schefter has the novelty that I could anticipate the higher one coming in, if I can anticipate that based on the data, I could wait for that patient. We generally would assume you do not remove somebody from a ventilator in order to treat someone of higher priority, although there is the possibility of finding other ways to deal with this, the possibility of a DNR, the possibility of not doing dialysis, and so forth. And there are poskim who mention the possibility that you could actually even unhook someone, but again, I haven't seen anybody recommend this in practice. Oh, I see what the person meant. Okay, someone wrote me a note here. Doesn't the concept they mean of GOSES allow for futility in ventilator therapy? So that is a huge topic, not for right now. But I will tell you that, in general, halachic authorities don't seem to support it, but it's a bigger topic than I can address at this moment. Also, somebody asked me here for my email address so that I could send them the Rav Asher Weiss's piece that I had uploaded before. I am including it in the chat now so that people can have that address. It's also on the source sheets. Okay, but let's go now to our vignette, the case that we're actually supposed to be addressing. An overwhelmed ICU has begun sharing ventilators among patients with similar medical needs, hooking them up simultaneously. This entails risks both in terms of cross-contamination, meaning one of them infecting or reinfecting the other, and in terms of the shifting medical needs of the respective patients. David, a respiratory therapist, has a patient connected to a ventilator solo, but then another patient is brought in and the team wants to connect the new patient to the same ventilator. Would Jewish law permit David to split this ventilator between the current patient and the new patient? So this is very tricky. You're not supposed to reduce the treatment of the patient who's in front of you. Nonetheless, both Rav Herschel Schefter and Rav Asher Weiss have offered leniencies on two different grounds. Rav Schefter's leniency, which I brought you in source number 34 on the sheet, he says this again is part of the whole idea of thick simultaneity. The idea that maybe you could consider the patients who come in sequence to come in simultaneously, and therefore you would be allowed to do this. In other words, what Rav Schefter actually writes, let me say it more clearly, what Rav Schefter actually writes is that when you start treatment on the first one, it's with the assumption that others are going to come in, and therefore you're not granting them full access to this ventilator. It's only a temporary scenario that they have it, and they know it's a given that they're going to lose that solo access at some point. That's Rav Schachter's position. Rav Asher Weiss in the video, as I referenced in number 35, suggests that it's like the trolley car dilemma. He says the reason why you're able to give it to this other patient is because what you're doing is not harming the patient who's on it, you're saving the life of the other patient, right? It's like the case where you divert the trolley car. That's the way that Rav Asher Weiss views it, when Chazon Ish was the one who said it, that this is an act of saving lives, not of harming the other person. All right. We haven't even touched our third case yet. Granted that it's a quick one, but I'm just going to take the one question I see on the chat, and then we're going to go further. The question that I see on the chat, isn't there always the possibility of a higher priority patient? How long do you wait? How many patients would you bypass? So Rav Schachter's formulation was that you would do, was if you know, based on the data of the last several days, that you're going to get other patients in the next hour or two. That's what he gave. I would say on that, as the Gemara likes to say, havud lo lo sifala. I don't think it could add to that chiddush, to that novelty, to go beyond what he has already said. I would say go with what he's actually saying, although I'd be happy to try to communicate the question to him if you had if you wanted to see just how far he would be willing to go with it. But that's what he said in his responsum. Okay. Use of universal DNRs for COVID-19 patients of particular categories. So the question that we have here is what do you do when there's a concern that practicing CPR on a patient, specifically chest compressions on a patient who has the virus, expels virus particles into the air and potentially endangers the healthcare professionals? So it's really two questions in one. Number one is the risk to them when these particles are expelled. And then number two, as a separate point, you're going to make them suit up. You're using up PPE for this patient. Are you able to apply a DNR in order to prevent that problem? So as I understand it, the idea of employing a blanket DNR in this situation has not been implemented anywhere yet. But it's certainly under discussion. I saw articles I gave you on the sheet in number 36 from CNN.com. I saw it in the Globe and Mail. I saw it in the Washington Post. All of these discussions about it. What would halacha say? So Rabbi Dr. Steinberg says not to do a blanket DNR. If the risk involved is what is normally assumed in dealing with contagious patients, then you have to do it. That's what he says, and apparently he's not concerned about conserving PPE either. And I gave you the reference in number 37 where he says this. Rav Asher Weiss, in his video on April 6th, agreed as well. This kind of a broad DNR will be permitted only for the sake of, he said, healthcare professionals who lack proper protection right now. But that would be it. Otherwise, they would not be required to risk their safety in that way. Okay, that's in terms of the blanket DNR. That was a relatively quick one. Which brings us to the last topic, the addendum that people asked for. So.